Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Fourth and final hour, Dale and Keith, Sports Radio WEEI. I don't know how we quite got off on... Well, you know, we really aren't talking tennis, to be honest with you. To be honest, we're talking about...
Yeah, I don't even know who Serena played. Is it played? Match?
Naomi Osaka.
Matched up with?
Yeah, but what we're really talking
tennis?
About is a really good athlete. One of the best tennis players in the history, if not the best female tennis player ever.
According to that Nike ad, she's the best athlete of all time.
Well, that might be a little.
In the history of the world.
That might be a little.
Seems strong. Seems a little strong. But she's very, very good.
She is.
One major away from, tying the most all time? Tying the record most all time of your 24th.
Would have tied Margaret Court.
Holy smokes. So, yeah, very, very impressive.
But she just lost her damn mind Saturday.
She did.
And she's getting, it's interesting because there's so much reaction coast to coast, and it's kind of split. Like, half the people are defending Serena, half the people are taking her to task. You heard Chris Russo earlier.
Mad Dog is not on her side. Mad Dog is strongly on the other side. But I don't think it's as simple as... Is it all her fault or is none of it her fault?
In this case,
it really can't be.
They both were dopes, in my opinion.
Well, it started with the coach, and that's one of the dumbest rules. Again, for somebody who doesn't know anything about tennis, that is a dumb rule. So you have a tennis coach, but they're not on the bench or anything with you. They could sit in the crowd, but they can't coach you.
He was literally sitting in the second row. She's getting ready to serve at one baseline. He's at the other baseline in the second row. And all he does is he takes his hands and he goes like this. In other words,
this guy,
play closer to the net.
It's all his fault. I'm blaming him entirely. Serena should fire her coach. Get him out of there.
And afterward, of course, she was saying, I don't cheat. Well,
I just think if you're so adamant
and then after
that
the
you
match,
don't
he goes,
cheat, there's
he goes,
something.
Yeah, I was coaching. But he says, guys coach all the time.
Yeah, but it's not going to fly. Not in the final. Come on.
Not when Carlos Ramos is... You're working the game.
That guy, yep.
You're not going to run that by me.
Not on his court.
Dan is in Newton, Mass. Hey, Dan, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going? What? So I was just hoping to make two quick points about this. The first being, you guys on a lot of the headlines are talking about the line where Serena says, he's a thief, is really what set off kind of the ref. But I think when she goes, you'll never work on one of my courts again. I mean, think about that in any other sport. Like, they catch Pineda with pine tar, they catch him cheating, and then he tells the ump, you're never going to ump one of my games again. So, I think as an ump, that's kind of like, this is my court, you can't talk to me like that.
Oh, no, listen, she said more than just the you're a thief. He actually, the you're a thief line is the one that apparently pushed him over the edge, though. That was when he hit her with the game penalty.
Right. I just think as a ref, you got to be able to take that. You got to have a thicker skin as a ref. It's not about you.
Big time thin skin ref situation. But
yes.
The other side of this is I'm actually a big fan of the no coaching rule because I think tennis is really the only sport where you got athletes out there on an island. I mean, they're by themselves. So, golfers have their caddies, boxers have their corners. And a big part of this game is analysis. So this rule only is in place in the majors. In the smaller tournaments, you can get coaching. And there's players like Caroline Wozniacki who win all those small tournaments because she gets coaching and then has trouble in the majors because once the mental side, once you're alone like that, it's a whole different sport.
Ooh, yeah. How about that, Dale? That's a nice little tennis knowledge. I didn't know that.
I got to be honest. Coaching, if he stood up and said, no, slice that first serve to the backhand side.
No, not allowed.
What he did was a hand gesture, which was
get it out of here.
Get up to the net.
Well, you're going to play by the rules or you're not?
It's really silly to me.
It is a dumb rule. There's no. I think it's a dumb rule. I understand it was Dan. I understand why he's bringing that up. But I just think if you're a coach and you think that you may try to communicate with your player, you can't. So you should probably go somewhere else. It's as simple as that. What are you doing?
I don't know how they determine
what's coaching and what's not.
No, where the player's group sits. She's sitting, the coach was sitting with her sister Venus.
Well, he should watch it on TV then, if he can't control himself.
Put him somewhere else, I guess.
Get him out of there. Put him with the broadcast team. He can offer some insight.
Yeah. Bob's in New Hampshire. Hey, Bob.
Yeah, hey, guys. I know this is probably the first time that you guys are talking tennis. And
ever.
You guys, it'll probably be the last.
Yeah, probably.
Good chance.
Yeah.
Let me add a little nugget to this. I'm a big tennis fan, and I was watching the match, and when she first was nailed for the coaching, Carlos Ramos comes on the loudspeaker and says, warning for coaching.
Right, warning, not a point at that point.
Exactly right. You're actually right. And she comes over to the chair, and it's audible. You can hear it. They got mics everywhere. And she says, listen, I would rather lose than accept coaching. I would never cheat. And he said something along the lines of, I understand that. I totally understand that. She says, okay, good. I'm glad to hear you say that. Good. Thank you. And I think at that point, she thought the warning was rescinded. In her mind, I think she thought the warning no longer existed. Then she can smash the racket
and it doesn't matter.
Then she thought, Bob, I'll just get a warning for this. All of a sudden, she got a point penalty, and everything went haywire from there.
You might be right.
Maybe
she thought that he was going to take it back. There was no announcement that said that, so it would be her own belief, I guess. Like, listen, giving officials a hard time is kind of the norm in professional sports. You know,
yeah,
you see umpires. Yeah. Now they've changed some rules up. Like, you can't argue balls and strikes.
Right,
so argue balls and strikes, you got to go.
You're automatically gone, and so that makes it a little bit easier for the refs and for the managers and the players. But they just sort of know right away if I'm going to run out there and say, hey, that was inside, then you're going to get tossed. But
NBA, it happens all the time.
And some of them have, you know, they just hate certain players. Like Rasheed Wallace, Cousins sort of has some of that now, but Rasheed Wallace, if he just looked at a ref, he'd get teed up. And then there was Joey Crawford, hated Tim Duncan, hated him with a passion. He like teed him up one time. He was sitting on the bench laughing about something else. Crawford thought it was about him, teed him up. Like, these guys have these vendettas, and it makes no sense. The thing that drives me the most nuts is in baseball, when an umpire stares down a hitter, like stares him back to the dugout. Like, all right, hard ass. Like, just call the game, please. And if the guy says something to you, but he's walking away, he's not showing you up, you don't need to take your mask off like you're going to fight him. Like, that is the biggest joke ever. They're not all like that, but a lot of these umps and refs have these big egos, and it's like, you weren't good enough to play the sport, so stop trying to pick fights with these guys.
Now, Ramos did not do the umpire thing, you know, where he's staring her.
he got off his chair, and he's like, out of my face, Rita.
No, he didn't do that.
No.
But he also, I think, missed an opportunity, and this is one of the great things about officiating. When they understand, I gotta back this off here. Yeah. I gotta de-accelerate this a little bit. Good umpires know when to do it. Good NBA officials know when to do it. Good NFL officials know.
Because what you could have done, I guess, is, you know, let her really, you know, give you the business there. But then at a certain point, it would be like delay a game. So it's like, you got to get back out there and be like, all right, I got it. Get back out there. You know, finish the match.
John's, I don't know where White Mountain is, but
Ooh, sounds exotic.
John, how are you?
Hi, how you doing? I'm in the White Mountain.
Oh, the White Mountains.
Yeah, beautiful country up there.
Yeah, it is. I love it. I just wanted to make a comment about Serena. I think she was a little wrong. She could have calmed it down a bit, but started thinking about, she's probably venting a little bit about how women are treated in tennis. You know, compared to the girl who had a shirt on backwards, they had to make a big deal out of that. And then, you know, when you get a fuse going, it gets a little shorter. All of a sudden, it blows up, and you start ranting, and you can't stop.
I got to be honest. I think she was trying to make that point post-match when she did her press conference. I don't think that entered into her mind at all when she's in the middle of fighting with this guy.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I'm just saying, you know, my opinion, I think that adds to it. You know,
she tried to become a hero of the women's movement post-match, and I'm thinking, come on. Really?
Yeah. I don't know. I think he, actually, post-match, to be honest, you might have had more of a leg to stand on than in match when you're screaming about that. Like, I think afterwards you could have brought up some of the other things that we discussed, you know, with the wardrobe penalty and these things that they had been screwing up in tennis, and they'd been a bit of a talker. But to suggest that no man would ever get penalized the way that she did, turns out from the tennis people, including Mad Dog, that's just not true. So that doesn't really help your argument at all.
617-779-7937. Paul's in Brockton. Hey, Paul.
Hey, Paul. I'm sorry. Hey, Dale.
That'd be you, Paul.
I don't know if you already discussed this. I apologize if you did. But I wanted to get your opinion on Adam McQuaid, not leaving him exposed for the expansion draft and keeping Colin Miller. I think that was a huge mistake then, and even more now with the return you got for McQuaid.
Yeah, I understand your point. There were a lot of people who thought that the Bruins should have exposed Kevin Miller instead of Colin Miller. I gotta be honest. I think the Bruins' opinion of Colin Miller was that he was an up and down player. When he was good, he was very good. There were a lot of times when he disappeared. I think they felt both Kevin Miller and Adam McQuaid brought more to the team than Colin Miller did. They had offensive-minded, puck-moving defensemen.
I was going to say, if anything, right
they
now
needed toughness.
We're wondering if Krug and Grizzlick can both be in the lineup at the same time. So I think Colin Miller might have been too much.
But I think you could have got a lot more, you know, if you traded Colin Miller than you
could. Oh, I got it. Oh, okay. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, also it's easy to see what Colin Miller was able to do last year in Vegas. You would definitely get more for him now. But think about then. I don't know if you would have gotten a ton for him then.
I just think the potential is there for
that's fair.
I think they felt there was great potential in Colin Miller as well. They were just sick of waiting for it to come out.
But so his point, so last year, could you have traded Colin Miller after, what, two seasons with the Bruins? Could you have traded him then and gotten more than Steve Kampfer, a fourth and a seventh?
Probably.
Yeah, so maybe that's his point.
I think, though, when they were making their decisions back then, they weren't talking about 2 years from now, we're going to trade this guy. What they were thinking back then is, and they were right in this regard, our team was too soft. We were too easy to play against. We have to have guys who will make it harder to play against the Bruins, and that's where Kevin Miller and Adam McQuaid came in. And Colin Miller is not going to give you any toughness at all.
No, and now you'd have each defensive pair would have a guy probably not super tough, right? If you had Krug on say the first pair, then you had Colin Miller on the second and then Grizzlick on the third, then, you know, teams could probably take advantage of that. We saw it in the playoffs, even with just the two of them.
Now you can look at it and say, well, see what happened.
Yeah.
We're talking 2 years
ago.
But
I also don't think it would have been like a huge return. Like, it's not worth freaking out about. It's not like, oh my God, you could have gotten a first round pick for him.
No, you wouldn't.
No, they left him exposed in the expansion draft. Like, that's sort of where he was on the roster.
Getting you through your workday, it's Dale and Keefe on WEEI.
In fact, as I look at this defense, one of the things that breaks my heart is I don't think there's a spot for Adam McQuaid when everybody's healthy. And it kills me. Adam McQuaid is one of my favorite Bruins ever. And I love this guy. I love the passion he brings. I love how he sells his body out every single shift. He'll block every shot. He'll fight for every teammate. He'll do anything and everything to help this team win. But if I look at the defensemen who are on the roster right now, my fear is there may not be a spot for Adam McQuaid in that normal six-man rotation.
Allergies.
Have you recovered?
Are really kicking up here.
You tough it up a little bit.
By the way, that was last year, and unfortunately, predicting what I thought was going to happen.
Yes.
That was from the award-winning Zero Pucks Given podcast.
Oh, that was from the pod.
Yes, from last year.
Nice. Way to mine that, Rossi.
We sniped that one right out.
Nicely done.
And that's why this trade didn't shock me.
No, it didn't. And I mean, the value for Adam McQuaid, like, that's probably fine. Like, you got
unrestricted free agent at the end of the season. Yeah. They weren't going to re-sign him.
My question is, do they do anything with the money that they saved? Because one of the things, they're like, forget Steve Kampfer in the fourth round pick, cap flexibility. You're like, all right, well, what do you do with that? Is there something to be done with that?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a crap ton of money.
It's like $2 million.
Well, plus you've got to pay Kampfer, so you got to deduct
that's the
that.
Difference. It's like 2.75, and then Kampfer is like 600 and something thousand, I think. So, yeah, let's just call it $2 million. You get, depending on where you already were before.
And Kampfer's not going to be here.
Yeah, probably not. No,
he's not. I mean,
yeah.
Well, Adam McQuaid would have played here before Steven Kampfer does.
No, I mean, Kampfer is just, you know, if two guys get injured, which is a possibility.
Sure.
You know, I mean, how about the playoffs 2 years ago? They had like five defensemen to grind. Kampfer would be on your second pairing.
Seemed like all on the same night.
Yeah, right,
they had everybody go down. Let's get to some of the reaction here, because we talked about the trade of McQuaid. Happened yesterday. And Bruins management weighed in on this. We'll start with Don Sweeney, as he made the announcement yesterday about the trade of McQuaid to the Rangers.
Again, very difficult day for me personally and for the organization as well. We want to thank Adam, a tremendous Bruin and a tremendous teammate. Very, as I said, difficult decision. The timing before leaving for China presented an opportunity for Adam to get to the Rangers and start right from square one with a new team. I think that was part of it. You know, we've gone back and forth for a little while. I've been debating whether or not we were going to stay as is and feel very confident about our group, or to allow, you know, some of the younger guys to continue to push through and feel okay about our depth, minus the obvious if we have injuries. So that's kind of been the conversations going back and forth. You know, some teams had reached out to me right after, in around the July 1st time frame. So I've sort of had things that I've explored, and I don't know if there's a perfect time, to tell you the truth. It just presented itself late last night. Made the decision today. There's a lot that went into it, and I was there every step of the way. And as I said, it was a difficult decision to, you know, because of what he's meant to the Boston Bruins and will always mean to the Boston Bruins.
He, and I know I went back and forth with folks on Twitter. He is nowhere close to being, you know, one of the best Bruins of recent memory. He wouldn't claim that, neither would his parents, for crying out loud. When I say he's one of my favorite members of the Bruins, he's this shy, quiet, unassuming guy who, when he puts the skates on and steps out on the ice, becomes a beast.
He could beat your face in. I love how you say he's one of your favorites, and people are like, no, he's not.
No, he's not.
Like, pretty sure he's one of my favorites. Like, maybe he's not one of your favorites, but he's also one of the favorites of the guys that he played with.
Oh, some of the
and
cuts.
So that's going to be tough.
Listening to some of the audio, Nesson was playing some
Brad
cuts.
Marchand.
Marchand, yeah. Chara, yeah. Charlie McAvoy, you know, talking about what he meant in this organization. Another guy who talked about what he meant in the organization was head coach Bruce Cassidy.
Yeah, I mean, going into the year, we had 8 defensemen, 6 would play. So it wasn't automatic that Adam would be one of the 2 out, but if it weren't worked out that way, it would be difficult. And even for the 1 now, it's going to be difficult. And it is tough to see him grow. It's been 10 years we've been together, way back in Providence. You know, paired him with Matt Lashoff way back in the day, became a shutdown defenseman for us, and he actually played second power play. We tried to grow his offensive game. So there's been a lot of work over the years with Adam. Today was a tough morning, but hopefully he gets a great opportunity to play in New York. And we'll miss him, mostly as a person, as a teammate.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely are going to miss him. I'm curious, not that there's a ton of fighting anymore in the NHL, which is, for me, I think it's too bad. We know Chara, nobody really wants to fight Chara, and Chara also doesn't fight a lot. But I always thought McQuaid was the best guy they had since Thornton left.
Kevin Miller's pretty close.
So Kevin Miller probably takes that on. He might have to fight a couple more times.
You've got several guys who are not afraid. Kevin Miller will take this on.
Backes can fight.
Nola Chari would take it on. If I'm Backes, I avoid it.
He's been dealing
with
a lot.
He's had too many concussions.
No, that's a good point.
Including, you know, a bad concussion last year. I would prefer he keeps his gloves on.
Some more. Yeah.
Chara would absolutely
do it.
Kevin
Miller's a good one.
Nola Chari's another guy who is more than happy to step in. They've got enough team toughness.
Yeah, that it won't be. I mean, because again, McQuaid only played in just under half the games a year ago. So it's not like he was always out on the ice there patrolling for the team. But they all loved him. He's been on the team, you know, a long time. Like, he was on the Cup team.
Yes.
You know, he's been there a long time, his whole career here. He is a bit of a fan favorite for sure, and now it's going to be weird seeing him play for the Rangers.
One of the people who took it real hard yesterday was a buddy of mine, Liam, the fist bump kid. He and Adam McQuaid had become best friends.
Oh, that sucks.
They were pals, and Adam was celebrating his, this is coming up in the book, November 6th.
Oh, yeah, nice.
So Adam was celebrating his birthday in the North End with his family, and they called up Liam and his family and said, hey, come on down and join us. And
oh, that is funny.
Liam was there with Adam and the family and celebrating Adam's birthday. He probably took it a little tough yesterday.
He's probably going to become a Rangers fan now.
I don't think so.
That, no? Okay.
No. I think he's a Bruins fan through and through. You know, it's okay to have guys on a team who aren't stars but are important parts of the team.
Well, you're not going to have...
Brock Holt is not a star. Right. He's an important part of the Red Sox.
Yeah, you're not going to have 20 All-Stars or whatever it is. You know, even all your starters aren't going to be All-Stars. So you have to have guys that have certain roles. And for a while, McQuaid has had that. But it sort of speaks to their talent level, too, which is actually a good thing. Like, as much as people like Adam McQuaid, well, now all of a sudden you look around, there's six, maybe seven defensemen on the team better than him. That's a good sign. Like, unfortunately for him, you get squeezed out of an opportunity and the team has to trade him away.
He was not going to play here.
He wasn't. But isn't that good? Like, before, you know, he's been on teams before where he might be the third or fourth best defenseman. And you say, well, you know, ideally, you'd like him to be more of an enforcer type and, you know, that third pairing.
Sixth defenseman on the team.
Then you're good. But if he has to take on a role bigger than that, it kind of speaks to the talent level of your team.
And I think they're also hopeful that one of these younger defensemen
is
going to make a real bid to make this team. The other guy who was going to play ahead of him, and I know Bruins fans don't necessarily know much about him yet, was John Moore. He was one of their only signings over the summer.
That's about it.
They signed him to a 5-year deal.
Him and what, the Loch Ness Monster? That's
and
about
him
it.
Too. Yeah. You know, they signed him to a 5-year deal. They're going to play him. He's going to play. He's a stay-at-home defensive defenseman. They think they've got enough offensive defensemen with McAvoy and Grizzlick and Krug. They wanted that stay-at-home defenseman type. They signed Moore to the 5-year deal. He's going
to
play.
And I think it got to a point, too, where if you want to say Kevin Miller and Adam McQuaid have, you know, sort of a similar game, or McQuaid is more like Kevin Miller than he is any of the other defensemen, even though Kevin Miller drives fans nuts at times, he outplayed him.
He's a better player. He's a better defenseman than Adam is.
So if they had to choose getting rid of one of them, I think, you know, they made the right choice.
Now, the Rangers' depth on the blue line is not as good as the Bruins is. He's going to get a chance to play there.
Yeah.
And I hope he stays healthy. Chances are good that he won't. But,
right.
You know, you hope that he stays healthy and maybe gets another contract out of this, because his contract is up at the end of the year. He wasn't going to re-sign here.
I just wonder if this is the roster, and the season is just around the corner, so the answer is probably yes, but I wonder, then there's always the trade deadline that you get to, and if you have a little bit more flexibility cap-wise, that can be a good thing. They're always active, whether it's somebody just like a Drew Stafford or if it's somebody much more significant. There's always moves to be made at the deadline, but see how the young guys do, particularly at the wing spots, because that's the one area that you thought, you know, Rick Nash, they tried it, didn't really work. They were in on Ilya Kovalchuk, that didn't happen. So you wonder if somebody becomes available there, if that's something that they would jump on.
Back to the calls at 617-779-7937. Craig's in Brighton. Hey, Craig.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's up, Craig?
Back to this tennis, and then I'll let it go.
All right. Okay.
Is it within the jurisdiction of the judge to call up the officials and have the coaches removed from the box before they even go after Serena?
Yeah, it's really odd, isn't it? Like, I never knew this about tennis and about in the majors and all this other nonsense, but I don't think they can tell the coaches where to sit. They just have to assume that they're not going to be coaching.
That they're
going to
follow
the
rules and not do it.
I think that's all it is.
Yeah, I mean, the rule's stupid, but
it is.
I mean, in baseball, if, you know, they get rid of the manager, he's got to move. He's got to go into the clubhouse.
That's right.
Why don't they, instead of accusing Serena of cheating, why don't they go after the guy who admitted it?
Yeah, but see, they didn't accuse her. She tried to make it that.
Yeah, she turned it into that, and she kind of lost it a bit from that. He was just saying that, you know, there's a rules violation going on right now, you know, warning. And then she kind of lost her mind. She mentioned how she was a mother. It really got kind of nuts.
I get all that, but why go after her first when...
No. What we're saying is because she's the player, and so there was an infraction, but he didn't say, you're cheating. He was like, you can't do that. Like, you, the collective you and your coach can't do this. And she took it as a personal attack.
Yeah, because I know earlier, well, afterwards, they showed a split screen, and as he was given that signal with his hands, Serena wasn't even looking at the box.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
I mean, that's what she was claiming. I don't know if she saw him or not. The gesture was so... It just happened to be that the cameras were on him when he was doing it. I mean, if they hadn't actually physically seen him make the hand gesture, nobody would have known what the heck he was doing.
Yeah, right. No, but so he's the one that started this. But then it was the other two, both Serena and the chair judge, that kind of turned it into what it's become.
Dick's out on the Vineyard. Hey, Dick, how you doing?
I'm good. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Dick?
Just wanted to let you guys know that it's very clear you're not tennis fans. and you haven't been following Serena, you're talking about a woman here who, at this very same tournament, the Open, threatened a person's life for calling a football. Do you recall that?
Yeah, no, I've been saying this,
I remember,
Dick,
like,
all
it was
along.
Yesterday.
Dick, I've been saying all along, her career is filled with instances like this.
Exactly, and she's been getting away with this crap her entire career, and the reason that she threatened that lines person wasn't the football. It's Kim Clijsters was beating the crap out of her.
Another known
this
mother.
This girl was beating the crap out of her. That's what this was about. Nothing more, nothing less. I have never seen in all the years, I've been following tennis a long time.
Sure.
You know, the bad guys, the McEnroes, the Connors, even that nut job from Romania, Ilya Nastase.
Oof.
And I have never seen an outrageous display as to what she did at this U.S. Open. And that umpire, that chair umpire, has no blame whatsoever.
Well, we'll disagree.
That's the rule.
No, and that's
it's
fine.
The rule. They know what the rule is.
He could have let her get away with calling him a thief.
Yeah.
No,
Dick, he can.
Come on, Dick.
No, he could not. And I'm going to tell you why.
No,
all right,
no,
Dick. I don't know, Dick. Come on, Dick.
It's okay to disagree with things. Yes, he could have.
Right.
I've heard, in her point, the one point that I'll agree with her on, I've certainly heard male tennis players swearing a blue streak at the chair umpire.
Oh, they lose their mind. What's that guy, Kyprios? Isn't he like the bad boy at tennis?
Is Ivan Gulagan-Cauley. Well, so is Kim Clijsters.
All right, let me stop you right there then. I'll show myself out of this conversation.
We will see what else you got. It's coming up next. What else you got?
Back to Dale. Dropping deuces right in front of you. And Keith.
TV, movies, video games, spear, and my dogs. All I need.
On WEEI.
You know, we get to the end of the 4 hours, and as is often the case, there are specific stories that we haven't gotten to. Maybe we forgot. Maybe we didn't notice. And it kind of brings about the final portion of the program, which we like to call...
What else you got?
So, Keith, what else you got?
I will begin. Thank you very much, Dale. Now, we did talk about Matt Patricia and the brutal start to his head coaching career with the Lions. We talked about the Bill Belichick
Detroit,
coaching
they're
tree.
Already turning on him.
They're turning on him. I just wanted to bring back something that we actually didn't mention as it regards to Matt Patricia. He was downplaying it today at the press conference, but after the Monday night game, a lot of the Jets players were saying they knew the plays. They knew what Stafford was going to run. And Patricia had some comment like, well, a lot of teams know what plays are coming and things like that. Like, oh, my God. So he doesn't like the roster or the players don't really like him. There's talk Mike Garafolo saying that he may get rid of some of the guys to make room for guys that are going to be on board with him. They get smoked on offense, defense, and special teams against the Jets at home on Monday Night Football. And apparently the Jets knew all the plays. So Patricia, my warm take Wednesday – Matt Patricia lasts less time for Matt Patricia in Detroit than Josh McDaniels in Denver, which was 28 games. It was 28 total games. He got fired after 12 games in his second season. I say Patricia lasts less.
So 27 and under.
Yes, yeah. 27 and a half.
Good job, Rossi.
So 26 from here.
Yes, yes. Because he actually inherited a pretty good team. And
with some expectations.
Right.
And they got a decent quarterback.
They got Garoppolo.
And the greatest offensive coordinator name in the history of football.
Oh, Jim Bob Cooter. Sure. And they got the...
And did the team like him? Did they want him?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think so. They wanted him, right? Oh, yeah. So that's a mess. It's even maybe a bigger mess than we thought. Dale?
What else you got?
Well, sometimes those of us who played sports growing up don't know when to give up. You know, like we think that... I still got some athletic ability.
Sure.
I mean, I've still got game left.
Yes.
And so there was a gentleman by the name of Richard Peel. He's 35 years old. And, you know, maybe he should consider another way to get his athletic endeavors
out. Why, what's his problem?
He was playing disc golf in Clearwater, Florida. On Monday. Is that what they call it?
Well, frisbee golf.
Frisbee golf. Yeah. That's what it was. He was playing disc golf. And he suffered some minor injuries playing disc golf on Monday.
Oh, really? Well, I don't... Okay.
He was retrieving his disc from a pond. He apparently isn't that good.
Oh, he must have a bad
disc
toss.
Golf.
He didn't need any ponds.
He got bitten by an 11-foot alligator.
What? Maybe leave it alone. How much is a frisbee? Like $5?
He got bit by an 11-foot alligator as he was retrieving his disc from a pond.
That is aggressive. Was it his disc-throwing arm, perhaps?
They said trappers and local officers responded to the scene, caught the alligator, tied him up, threw him into the back of a truck. Mr. Peel, Richard Peel, is expected to be okay, so evidently the injuries weren't that...
Gracious.
I would have had a heart attack.
Oh, I would have passed out. 11-foot alligator attacking me? I'm dead.
Did you bring him into a liquor store?
No, that guy was great.
11-foot, I don't think he could lug this thing
around. No, he's not carrying that guy in there. That's for sure. So, Ross, what do you got? Anything? Nothing? You got anything? Oh, wait. Oh. Yes! Yes! Who could it be today? It's your...
This one's generic.
We don't do generic.
Generic? Come on. I need the name. Who's the name?
Yao Ming.
Yao! They didn't have a Yao!
I was going to do that. Then there's like 50 people back here all of a sudden.
That's Dale's friend. Yao Ming. You've been on stage with Yao Ming.
With Yao Ming and Shaquille O'Neal at the same time.
So, Jesus, you should post that picture again.
You could probably tell which one of us wasn't the NBA player when you see it.
Well, happy...
How old is Yao
38
today?
Years old.
38.
Oh, he should still have some already game left.
He should. This guy's been a Hall of Famer for like 4 years, right?
Yeah.
He's been there a little while.
And a really nice guy, by the way.
Rossi doesn't want him in the Hall of Fame, but he had a better career than you think.
No,
he
and did. I also realize every time I make this argument that it is the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Everybody's in there.
It's not the NBA Hall of Fame.
No, it's not.
All right, we got to get out of here. OMF is up next. They're at Fenway Park. That means the manager, Alex Cora, is on at 2:30.
All right.
So we'll all be listening into that. You guys enjoy the rest of your day. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Thank you for stopping by. Goodbye.
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 Thank you for stopping by.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.